Well, welcome to Traveling Through History this week. We're really glad you joined us, and we have an exciting program we put together for you tonight about a man that I've admired for many, many years. I did not know a lot about him, and I'm not really diving into his background, but I always knew about his Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, which, of course, is one of the most famous speeches in American history and even in world history. Patrick Henry was considered our greatest orator. And probably number two would be Samuel Adams. And we have an episode about Samuel Adams coming up as well. But in terms of Patrick Henry, he was admired by all at the time, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and all of the other founders really looked to him as the number one orator and the best debater of all the founding fathers. He actually wasn't even considered a founding father until he gave that great speech in the St. John's Church in Richmond. Meeting with all the Virginia Burgesses. He had been reacting to, for some time, some of the actions that the British had been taking and imposing on the colonies. And the Stamp Act, for him and for many of the colonials and many of the individuals who were thinking about revolution, was too far. The English were trying to find ways to milk taxes out of the colonies, both in America and all of their other colonies around the world. And they were just continually, upsetting the colonists and making them more angry and prodding them and finding ways to squeeze taxes out of them. And the Stamp Act was too far for these guys. And especially for Patrick Henry, he really based his entire speech on anger and passion coming out of that action, and essentially told the rest of the people that were congregated there in the Virginia Burgesses that he didn't think war was avoidable now. Many of them had been arguing at the time that maybe there was some peaceful way out of this and that we could come to some resolution and maybe we could get the Brits to back down on the Stamp Act and back down on taxes in general. But he felt like it had gone across the Rubicon and that it was now time to actually take action for Virginia to form a militia, for all the colonies to form the militia and to really to take action and prepare for war. So, if Thomas Jefferson and James Madison were the pen of the American Revolution, which they were with the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, Patrick Henry was the voice and he was the orator of the American Revolution. His speeches and the way he spoke and the arguments that he made and all the techniques that he would use to convince people of his points really became the signatory voice of the revolution and voice of the passion that the colonies had for their own independence. So, really excited to take you through a little bit about Patrick Henry and his life. And then we're going to go through a short video where we're going to actually show you that famous speech and reenactment of the famous speech. The cool thing about the video we're going to watch is that the reenactment's done actually in St. John's Church in Richmond, which was established in 1741, well before the speech was given. And so it's pretty cool to see a reenactment done in the exact place that Patrick Henry did it all those years ago. So we'll go through that video and we'll talk about it. And then we will be doing our 25 interesting facts about Patrick Henry, like we always do in all of our programs, one of my favorite segments. And we'll probably tell you a lot of things you didn't know about him and about the things that he did on behalf of the country and why he is one of our founding fathers. So interesting and fascinating guy. I'm really excited to present this to you. So let's talk a little bit about Patrick Henry. He was born May 29th, 1736. He was an American politician. He was one of the country's best lawyers. He got an incredible reputation as a man who could go into any courtroom and knock the socks off any case that he took on. He was also a planter. He was an orator. And in the Second Virginia Convention, like we talked about in 1775, he was the orator who gave the Give Me Liberty, Give Me Death speech. And that's what put him on the map, both in the colonies and really worldwide. He was a founding father and served as the first Virginia governor after the Revolution. So he really was kind of the first leader of Virginia, largely getting that post after he gave that incredible, passionate speech, which we'll go over in detail. He also, after that first three-year consecutive terms that he had there, went and did a couple of other political posts, and then came back and became Virginia's sixth governor as well, much later on. So very interesting. He served two different times as Virginia governor. He was a native of Hanover County. Henry was primarily educated at home. He didn't really have a formal education like many of the other founders did. And after he got out of school at a very young age, he had several unsuccessful ventures and businesses that his father helped him get started with. He and his brother tried together to have a store for a while. They tried farming. They tried all kinds of different types of things to get something going, and they and really kind of failed at almost everything they tried early on. And then when he turned 18, he married at a very young age, as you can see. And because of his marriage, he decided that it was time to try something else that he could be successful at. And he read the law, and he finally found his calling, and immediately was incredible at making arguments and passionately turning people to his side and to his point of seeing, to his point of, he was very passionate and very good at turning people to his point of view. So Henry was born on the family farm, which was Studley in Hanover County. His father was John Henry, and John Henry was an immigrant from Abinshire, Scotland. He attended King's College at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland, so he was an educated man. Before emigrating to Virginia in the 1720s, he had come over at the time with a friend of his named John Cerne. He came over with a friend of his named John Syme. And John was the one who had had the idea to come to Virginia and to seek out his fortune in the colonies. And so John Henry followed him. The two Johns did very, very well for themselves. John Henry actually was able to obtain 1,500 acres in Virginia during his first 3 years in the state. So he did really, really well. Was an excellent farmer, was doing tobacco and doing all kinds of other crops, wheat. Interestingly enough, John Syme, who was his friend who he followed over on the ship to emigrate to Virginia, ended up passing away from scarlet fever. And John Henry then married his wife, Sarah Syme, about 2 years later. So interesting that he actually married his best friend's wife. Sarah actually came to the marriage with quite a dowry, both money and land. So on top of the 1,500 acres he had already acquired, he got some more land on top of that. And so he had about three working farms total at the time. But as I said, the main house was at a home called Studley. As I mentioned, Patrick Henry at 18 years old decided to read the law, became a successful lawyer, and at 20 entered the Virginia bar, found that he was very good at the law, and really actually won his first four cases on the bench. He immediately started working within the Virginia political system, kind of got a name for himself. One of the biggest cases that he did that got him kind of statewide and nationwide acclaim was a case called Parson's Cause, which was against the Anglican clergy at the time. And this was a case that really came out of the fact that the Virginia tobacco crop had had a couple of barren years, really causing very much harm to the economy and to the farmers in general. The Anglican ministers back then used to get paid in tobacco, and they would get paid a certain amount of tobacco every month, and then they would take that tobacco and go sell it on the open market, and that was their salary. Well, because of the bad tobacco crop several seasons in a row, the Anglican clergy from the Anglican churches had not been paid, and so they essentially sued. And Patrick Henry was involved in that case, and it was a very, very big case because everyone in the colonies was trying to determine in these kinds of situations who was going to win. Was it going to be the clergy who didn't really have a contract and didn't really have a formal salary like other professions, or was it going to be those that they were suing were going to win because basically we don't have a contract with you? And Patrick Henry won that case and got nationwide acclaim from it. And there was lots of writings about it in all the newspapers at the time. And then, of course, after he became politically active, he started doing some writings along with his speeches that he would do in the Virginia Burgesses and the Virginia House. He started writing more and more about the infringement upon the colonialist rights that he was seeing from the British. His language got more and more inflammatory, both oratory and written. He actually would write columns in the local newspapers as well. And he, of course, was building up to the very famous speech in the St. John's Church, which made him a nationwide hero, where he did the Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech. And you'll see when we do the reenactment, some of the passionate arguments he was making to the rest of the gentlemen who were there that day. As I said, going into that two-day session with the Virginia Burgesses meeting in the church, they had been harassed quite a bit by the British governor of Virginia. His name was Dunmore. And because Dunmore had harassed them so much, they had decided that the only really safe place for them to meet was in an Anglican church called St. John's Church. And that's why they were having their legislature meeting there. Going into that meeting, most of the gentlemen who went into that room were thinking they were going to try to find a way, a peaceful way to negotiate with Dunmore and with the British to find a peaceful way out of this and avoid war. And so really it was Patrick Henry who went into that room that day to decide to inflame the gentlemen that were there into realizing that revolution was the only way to go after the Stamp Act. So that's a little bit of history of Patrick Henry. He took a little bit of every position you could take up the Virginia line, not only just governor, but I mentioned the House of Burgesses, the Virginia legislature. He was a Virginia senator. He served in Congress. He served in the First and Second Continental Congresses. At the Second Continental Congress, when he went to Philadelphia with the rest of the Virginia contingent, he became one of the most passionate orators at that gathering as well up in Philadelphia. Interestingly enough, he didn't think anybody when he got there would know who he was, but almost immediately John Adams came right up to him and shook his hand and said, "I've heard of you, Mr. Patrick Henry, and I've read of you. I'm very glad to meet you, and I'm glad you're on board with our cause." And Jefferson, of course, and Washington knew him very well from Virginia Burgess's times. So all of these founding fathers were kind of in awe of this guy because of his oratory skills. He was that good. He was that passionate. And you'll see when we go through this reenactment. So let's go ahead and take a look at that reenactment now, this world-famous speech, one of the greatest speeches of all time, and from our greatest orator in our revolution, Mr. Patrick Henry.
Gentlemen, there is no longer any ground for hope. If we wish to be free, if we wish to preserve inviolate those inestimable privileges which belong to us as free men, if we mean not basely to abandon the noble struggle in which we have been so long engaged, in which we have pledged ourselves never to abandon until the glorious object of our struggle be obtained, then we must fight. Hey. I repeat it, sir, we must fight! Hey. And appeal to arms and to the God of hosts is all we have left us.
To arms, Mr. Henry. What arms?
They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so powerful an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs, hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemy hath bound us hand and foot? Sir, we are not weak. If we make a proper use of those means the God of nature hath placed in our power, 3 millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty, and in such a country that which we possess are invincible by any force our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Besides, sirs, we have no election. Should we be base enough to desire it, it is now already too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat, but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged, their clanking may be heard upon the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come. I repeat it, sir. Let it come.
Mr. Henry, we speak for peace, sir.
It is in vain to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace. But there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that blows from the north shall bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that they wish? What would they have? Is life so dear? Or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death!
To arms, Mr. Henry!
So you can see there a pretty cool reenactment. Those are actors who actually reenact that every single year at St. John's Church. And I would love to be in attendance one day live. That'd be really cool. But just to give you some context about this speech, it's not very often when a world-renowned individual, one of our founding fathers, gets known for one moment. But this really was the case with Patrick Henry. The speech was so famous and what he said was so impactful that it went around the colonies like wildfire. In every newspaper, in every publication, word of mouth, all of a sudden everyone was talking about Patrick Henry and his Give Me Liberty, Give Me Death speech. You have to remember the context of when he gave it was we had just had Lexington and Concord up in Massachusetts. So we had our Massachusetts brethren, as he just mentioned there, already in the field. What he meant by that was we already were clashing with the British. They already had had the Boston Tea Party. This was 1775, and 1774 is when all those activities had already happened. And so this was, in his mind and many of the gentlemen in the room's mind, inevitable. The war was already on. So now it was all about what was Virginia going to do about it, and were they going to join the cause? Interestingly enough, these were very brave men. If you think about their meeting in the St. John's Church at the behest of their countrymen, but they're doing it against British will, of course, and against the will of the governor, Dunmore. What they were doing at this time was could have gotten them hung. I mean, this was considered rebellion. And so it was a very brave thing. But really the bravest of all of them in that room that day was Patrick Henry, even braver than George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Richard Henry Lee. There were many famous people there that day, and he really was the one who lit the match of the revolution that day. He's the one who got Virginia on board. Shortly thereafter, by the way, he was named head of the Burgesses towards the Virginia militia. In other words, essentially the commander-in-chief of the Virginia militia. And he took that post and he held on to it for a year until 1776 when we declared independence. During that year, Patrick Henry met with George Washington and other local militia leaders to arm up the Virginia militia, get them uniforms, get them weapons, organize, drill, train, and get them ready for what they knew what was coming. Like he said, the winds from the north. And what he meant by that was the war was coming and it was inevitable and that Virginia was going to get dragged into it. So that was a little bit of context behind that speech, and I hope you enjoyed that reenactment. I think it was a very, very good one. Now let's go ahead and take a look at the 25 interesting facts about Patrick Henry, and I think you're going to learn some things about him you didn't know. Number one, the full text of Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty address is unclear. So on March 23rd, 1775, Henry gave that speech that we just listened to that would capture the spirit of the American Revolution. Addressing the Second Virginia Revolutionary Convention in Richmond, and you can see a picture of it there on the right, the reenactment we just saw, that was their picture at the time of what they captured. He insisted the war with Britain was inevitable and that argued that nothing less than an organized militia could defend the colonies. Like all other great orators, he saved his best line for last. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. Nobody who heard the speech wrote a transcript of it at the time, because as we know, that was 250 years ago and you weren't transcribing speeches. The text of the address was not published until 1817, which is many years later, in a biography of Patrick Henry by William Wirt, who was a future attorney general under James Monroe. To reconstruct the speech, Wirt interviewed over 30 eyewitnesses who were there that day and pieced together their recollections. He said later that he used federal judge St. George Tucker's description almost entirely. Most historians believe that the speech, as recreated by Wirt, is faithful to Henry's original remarks. And of course, we'll never know exactly what he said, but we have to think that Wirt interviewing the 30 individuals who were there and reconstructed the speech was pretty close to the spirit of what Patrick Henry was saying that day. Number two, the Give Me Liberty speech was held in St. John's Church in Richmond, Virginia, which is still a working church today. You can see a picture of the church there on the lower left. You can see the stars and stripes of the original 13 colonies flag that they were flying when they went into battle against England. And of course, the Give Me Liberty, Give Me Death black and white version of his speech that day. So at the Second Virginia Convention, March 23rd, 1775, in St. John's Church, Richmond, Henry delivered the speech that assured his fame as one of the great advocates of liberty of all time. St. John's Church was built in 1741. His speech became the match that lit the flame for the revolution and the quest for independence. Ironically, many of the speakers before him advocated for finding a peaceful resolution with England to avoid bloodshed. Henry's speech completely changed the tenor of the meeting completely from the beginning, and everyone got fired up to go for independence. In attendance at his speech were Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Richard Henry Lee, Peyton Randolph, and four other Virginians who signed the Declaration of Independence. So pretty cool little fact there. Eight different Virginians who signed the Declaration were there listening to Patrick Henry give his passionate speech. Number three, Patrick Henry's father was an immigrant. He was a native of Aberdeen, Scotland. We mentioned this a little bit earlier, John Henry. He hailed from the relatively affluent and well-regarded family in Scotland. His intelligence and Latin composition skills helped him earn a scholarship. He also enrolled at the school with John Syme, a childhood friend who had made his fortune in Virginia. Henry decided to join him in Virginia a year later. In 1727, John Henry set sail for the colony where he worked with Syme. Henry acquired over 15,000 acres of land in his first 4 years in Virginia and set up a very successful farm called Studley. In 1731, Syme passed away, and 2 years later, Henry and Syme's widow Sarah were married. they went on to have 11 children total, 9 of whom survived to adulthood. And of course, one of them was Patrick Henry. That's a little bit about his family and his parents. Number 4, Patrick Henry played several musical instruments. So he lived at Studley, the family farm, until he was 14 years old. He pursued several hobbies, including hunting, which was one of his favorites. He was very fond of his shotgun. He also played the flute and the violin. Like Jefferson, he was particularly good at the violin, and he would actually do performances. As an adult, he loved comedic novels, especially The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, Gentleman, which was a satire by Lawrence Stern. So he had a good sense of humor. Number 5, Henry failed at tobacco farming and other businesses. We mentioned this a little bit earlier, that some of his early ventures he went into with his brother were not successful. His professional life began with a string of unsuccessful business ventures. In 1752, John Henry set up a shop for Patrick and his brother William to run on their own. It closed 2 years later. Marriage inspired Patrick Henry to pursue a different career. In 1754, 18-year-old Patrick married his first wife, Sarah Shelton, and Sarah, whose dowry included a 300-acre farm. So there he grew wheat and barley and tobacco until the family house burned down in 1757, which was a really unfortunate occurrence. He was not the farmer whose father was, and he found that out pretty quickly. So then Henry began working at his father-in-law's tavern after that. All of these little careers he had in his teenage years were before he found the law. Number 6, the Parsons Cause case made him famous. We mentioned this earlier. There's a picture of him there arguing this case. This is one of the most famous cases in the country up to that time. People were following it from all the colonies in the newspapers as to what was going to happen. So a 3-year drought in the mid-1750s hurt Virginia's tobacco farms, which produced the main driver of the colony's economy. The crisis impacted literally every citizen, including Anglican clergymen, who were typically paid in tobacco. Each minister usually received 16,000 pounds of the crop per year. In 1755, the House of Burgesses, which was Virginia's elective legislative body, restructured this generous payment policy by passing the Twopenny Act. Under the new law, clergymen would instead be paid 2 pence in cash for every pound of crop that he would normally be entitled to. Due to the market price of tobacco, though, the act amounted to a pretty substantial pay cut for all of these guys. King George II sided with the ministers, who were infuriated by the new scheme, and King George vetoed the law in August 1759. So this is another case where the British came in with a heavy hand and interfered in Virginia politics and interfered in Virginia's affairs. In 1763, 4 years later, Reverend James Maury sued his church for back pay. Patrick Henry represented the church against the minister who was suing for back pay. And he used his platform to denounce the king's meddling of Virginia's democratic government. This was the first time that Patrick Henry became famous and really stood up against England. He was becoming one of the great revolutionaries through his reputation. And one of the quotes he said in this case was, "A king, by annulling or disallowing laws of this statutory nature from being the father of his people, denigrates into a tyrant." That was the first time he had really associated the King of England with a tyrant. And that was certainly an argument he would carry on from there. His rhetoric turned him into a very popular figure throughout Virginia, and he started to get a nationwide following. Number 7, Patrick Henry was the first elected governor of Virginia. So in 1776, when the colonies broke off from England, he won the first of 3 consecutive gubernatorial terms, remaining in office until 1779. Interestingly enough, you see it says there are 3 consecutive terms. Back then, a governor term was only 1 year, so he had 3 consecutive terms of 1 year each. During his time, Henry married his second wife, Dorothea Dandridge. His first wife, Sarah, had died in 1775 after coping with mental illness. He was subsequently reelected governor in 1784, 5 years later, and served another 2 years. So he essentially served 5 terms as governor in 2 different periods of time. Patrick Henry, number 8, argued unsuccessfully against the U.S. Constitution. And you can see at the top there was one of the constitutional conventions. And he's up at the very top with a white and holding a script, passionately speaking to the entire audience. And then down below is another picture of him at the constitutional convention, arguing that the Constitution should not be passed without a Bill of Rights. He essentially became one of the Constitution's loudest foes. He feared its provisions leaned towards a monarchy, giving too much power to the federal government. He joined Lee and Mason as the states' rights advocates. "The concern I feel on this account," he told George Washington, "is really greater than I'm able to express." Consequently, Henry spoke out against its adoption during the Virginia Ratification Convention in 1788. No one at the convention spoke at greater length on the subject during the 3.5-week event. Henry consumed nearly 25% of the total floor time. Just imagine that. He was speaking for 25% of the time during 3.5 weeks. His oratory skills were unmatched among all of the founding fathers. People would write at the time back then that he was such a good speaker, people could sit there spellbound for hours just listening to his oratory skills. However, even though he swayed many votes during that time, on June 25th, Virginia's representatives adopted the Constitution by a 10-vote margin. So essentially, he was arguing against James Madison. He was on the other side, arguing for the Constitution and arguing that he agreed a Bill of Rights was important, but that we could come back and amend the Constitution with it later. So talking about the Bill of Rights, number 9, he was an early advocate of the Bill of Rights. When the Constitution was sent to Virginia for ratification in 1788, Henry wanted a Bill of Rights to be included, similar to the one that was in the Virginia Constitution, as written by Jefferson and Madison. But most delegates, including James Madison himself, didn't think one would be necessary in the federal document. Henry thought its absence signaled a federal power grab and the U.S. Constitution was incomplete without it. He argued vehemently day after day in the ratifying convention for its inclusion and swore he would never vote for it without the Bill of Rights. Madison, struggling to convince Virginia's anti-federalist delegates to ratify the Constitution, arranged for a Bill of Rights to be added once the Constitution was approved. The first U.S. Congress drew up a list of 12 rights and sent them to the states for ratification, but this wasn't good enough for Henry. The states ended up approving 10 of the rights, which were amended to the Constitution 3 years later in 1791. You can see a really excellent book there about Patrick Henry called The Lion of Liberty. I'd highly recommend if you want to read more about Patrick Henry. That's a really good book. And down below there, you'll see the original copy of the written Bill of Rights that were meant to be amended to the Constitution. Number 10, Patrick Henry turned down George Washington's attempt to appoint him to Secretary of State. America's first president offered Henry the position after his previous Secretary of State, Edmund Randolph Jennings, resigned in 1795. Henry declined, telling Washington that my domestic situation pleads strongly against a removal to Philadelphia. So essentially, he couldn't go to Philadelphia at the time because he had a lot of things going on at home. Henry was supporting no less than 8 children by my present marriage, he said. And he also had a widowed daughter from the previous marriage. Washington eventually appointed Federalist Timothy Pickering for that post. Number 11, Henry's political allegiance evolved over time. So Henry generally allied with Jefferson and Madison in the Democratic-Republican Party. But towards the end of his life, he started to soften his positions against some of the anti-federalist policies he had before. In 1799, very late in his life and late in his political career, he even ran for Virginia State Legislature as a member of Alexander Hamilton's Federalist Party, which is very interesting because a Patrick Henry of 30 years before that would have never run for that party or ever believed in anything about it. On the campaign trail, he delivered what would be his last public speech at the Charlotte County, Virginia courthouse. In a debate with Democratic Republican John Randolph, Henry said that although the people have the right to overthrow the government, they should do so only when there's no other recourse. Otherwise, the nation would descend into monarchy. "United we stand, divided we fall," he said. Let us not split into factions which must destroy that union upon which our existence hangs. So he had really evolved a lot over 30 years to be much less of a states' rights and much more for the union and for keeping the union together. Number 12, Henry was one of Virginia's best lawyers. You can see a couple pictures of him there advocating on behalf of his clients. He really was kind of spellbounding in the courtroom, apparently. After failing in business and as a farmer, he increased his responsibilities by marriage in 1754 to Sarah Shelton. The demands of a growing family spurred him to study the law. And in this profession, he soon displayed remarkable ability. Within a few years after his admission to the bar in 1760, he had a large and profitable clientele. He was especially successful in criminal cases, where he would make use of his quick wit, his knowledge of human nature, and his forensic gifts. Meanwhile, his oratory genius had been revealed in the trial known as the Parson's Cause in 1763. We mentioned and talked a little bit about the Parson's Cause case and how that really made his career. People started to become aware of Henry outside of Virginia and in the rest of the colonies. Number 13, he gained fame for his stance against the Stamp Act. As we mentioned, this was the biggest tax that had come in, and they had been brewing against all of the taxes by the British, but this was the one that hurt the most. So at the Capitol in Williamsburg, where he had just been seated as a member of the House of Burgesses, he delivered a speech opposing the British Stamp Act. The act was a revenue law requiring certain colonial publications and documents to bear a legal stamp. Henry offered a series of resolutions asserting the right of the colonies to legislate independently from the British Parliament, and he supported these resolutions with great eloquence. Caesar had his Brutus, Charles I his Cromwell, and George III, and then he was interrupted by cries of treason, treason. But he concluded, according to a likely version, may profit by their example. If this is treason, make the most of it. So he continued to advocate again against any of these British taxes and overbearing laws that had come in. Number 14, Patrick Henry was a wartime governor of Virginia. We mentioned that he was Virginia's first governor, and it was right at the time of the Revolution. So he was appointed the commander of the Virginia forces, and he spent most of his first 2 years in the office arming, equipping, and raising money for the Virginia militia to be ready to support war. Henry served on the committee in the Virginia Convention of 1776 that drafted the first constitution for the state. That constitution did uphold a Virginia Bill of Rights, of which he was a huge proponent, as you know. He was reelected in 77 and 78 for one-year terms, thereby serving continuously as long as the new constitution permitted. As wartime governor, he gave General George Washington able support, and during his second term, he authorized the expedition to invade the Illinois country under the leadership of George Rogers Clark. So that's a whole interesting separate topic that we're not going to have a lot of time to get into here, but very interesting expedition invasion they did in Illinois. Number 15, Patrick Henry was considered a founding father because of his fiery speeches about liberty. Although he did not hold a major federal office, his impact resonated from Virginia all over the colonies. He was by far the best orator in the young country and used many rhetorical speaking methods to hammer home his messages. He used the ethos, pathos, logos, Grecian rhetorical structure masterfully. Debating societies and law schools have taught Patrick Henry's techniques throughout our history. And you can see the ethos, pathos, logos structure there that had been put together during Grecian times. Ethos being using character and credibility and ethics to persuade. Pathos being using emotions and passion to persuade. And logos using logical reasoning and evidence to persuade. And ironically, he was so good at what he did that he was good at all three of these methods, and he would use them all in the same speech. You might have seen there in the reenactment that we saw, he actually used all three of these techniques. Number 16, Henry's desire for freedom was brewing. When the British closed the port in Boston in response to the Boston Tea Party, and you can see a picture of the Boston Tea Party there on the left, the Virginia House of Burgesses declared June 1st, 1774, would be a day of fasting and prayer in support of the people of Boston. Throughout the colonies, committees of correspondence had been created several years prior to coordinate efforts concerning the British. These committees led to the gathering of the First Continental Congress in September of 1774. Patrick was elected representative to this Congress for the colony of Virginia. His passion for freedom was regularly represented in these proceedings. He argued on behalf of citizens in the other colonies that Virginians needed to stand with them in solidarity. So he continued to become more and more and more of a leader when it came to the freedom push. 17, Patrick Henry and the Gunpowder Incident. In April 1775, British Governor Virginia Dunmore, we mentioned him earlier, he was the British governor of Virginia, removed the gunpowder from Williamsburg magazine. And you'll see there on the top right and left, the actual magazine in Williamsburg that was raided by the British, and all the gunpowder was disappeared. Henry organized the local militia and demanded that the governor return the gunpowder after hearing word of the battles at Lexington and Concord, Massachusetts. So he literally organized the local militia. They got into marching order, and they marched towards Williamsburg to go confront Dunmore. The governor sent the colonists a bill for the value of the powder and declared Henry an outlaw for disturbing the peace in the event that became known as the Gunpowder Incident. Dunmore put out an order for Henry's arrest, but it was never executed. So he was actually never arrested. So these continued tensions on a daily and monthly basis were continuing to happen all the time. And the temperature of the conflict was starting to heat up. Number 18, Patrick Henry was a family man. We mentioned that his first marriage was to Sarah Shelton in 1754. He moved them into their Scotchtown plantation in 1771, along with their six children. Sarah fell ill, becoming violent to herself and to others, and was possessed in a deteriorating mental state. Instead of placing Sarah in a mental institution, Henry took care of her in the basement of an apartment at Scotchtown until her death in 1775. 2 years after Sarah's death in 1775, he married 22-year-old Dorothea Dandridge, who the picture of her there on the bottom left in the blue dress. Ironically, Dandridge was a cousin of Martha Washington, and they ended up having 11 children together. So Patrick Henry was the father to a total of 17 children with these two women. 13 of them survived to adulthood. 3 months prior to taking his seat in the Virginia House of Delegates for the second time, Henry died of stomach cancer in 1799 at his Virginia home, Red Hill Plantation. So we mentioned that campaign he had earlier where he had switched parties over to the Alexander Hamilton party. Well, he actually won that seat, but he never got to take the seat because he ended up dying of cancer before he could take it. 19, Patrick Henry was not interested in power. After leaving governance entirely in 1790, Henry returned to the law, mainly to pay off debts that he had incurred during his time as governor. He reconciled with George Washington despite being on different sides of the political spectrum when it comes to passing the Constitution. He found himself more aligned with Federalists only 3 years later. Washington even offered him multiple prominent positions in his administration. He offered him a seat on the Supreme Court, a position of Secretary of State, minister to Spain. Every single time he refused, instead choosing to stay with his family. In 1796, many influential Virginians tried to push him to make a run for president, but still Henry refused. Due to his ill health, Henry turned down an appointment by President John Adams to become special envoy to France in 1798. So you can see he pretty much could have had any job he wanted in either of these first two administrations. But he was just getting ill health at the end. He was more interested in staying home with his family. Number 20, Patrick Henry was a very religious man. He was educated by his father and by his uncle, the Reverend Patrick Henry, rector of the Hanover Parish, St. Paul's. Though Henry held true to his Anglican beliefs throughout his life, he became an Episcopalian after the American Revolution. As a youth, he regularly accompanied his mother to sermons given by the evangelical Presbyterian Samuel Davies, whose oratorical example had a strong influence on Henry. His oratory style was a combination of classic philosophers, great orators from history, and Christian pastors he had listened to all his life. Henry often referred to God as a course of our freedoms and rights. Henry often referred to God as the course of our freedoms and rights, not the government. And this became a core element of all of our founding documents. And you can see one of his famous quotes, "Being a Christian is a character which I prize far above all this world has or can boast." Number 21, Patrick Henry was noticed at the First Continental Congress. I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but in 1774, Henry and six other Virginia delegates traveled to the First Continental Congress in Philadelphia, where John Adams felt there was not one member except Patrick Henry who appeared sensible of the precipice, or rather the pinnacle on which we stood, and had candor and courage enough to acknowledge it. So essentially, John Adams not only walked right up to him and shook his hand, but then complimented him after the proceedings that he was the most honest and the most forthright when it came to telling everybody in that room what they needed to hear. Henry felt the colonies were set on a path to war and thrilled like-minded delegates by declaring distinctions between Virginians, Pennsylvanians, New Yorkers, and New Englanders are no more. I'm a Virginian. I am not a Virginian, but an American. Number 22, Patrick Henry and James Madison clashed over religious freedom. Henry was elected to the Virginia House of Delegates in 1779 and emerged as one of the most influential members of the assembly. Virginia politics began to split into two distinct factions, anti-federalist and federalist. And Henry often found himself in conflict with James Madison, the leader of the Federalist faction. Henry and Madison clashed over the separation of church and state. Though he was committed to religious freedom, Henry opposed a complete separation. Madison advocated complete, unregulated freedom of thought. When Henry, who had been reelected to a fourth term as governor in 1784, introduced his plan for a tax to support Christian teachers, a plan that was met with ambivalence and debate among the assembly, Madison seized the opportunity to rally support for the Jefferson Penn Bill for Establishing Religious Freedom, which essentially squashed Henry's amendment that he'd put in. You can see the two men there on the right, and you can see another famous quote by Patrick Henry. He had a lot of them. This one was, "That religion, or the duty which we owe our Creator, and the manner of discharging it, can be directed only by reason and conviction, not by force or violence. And therefore, all men are equally entitled to the free exercise of religion according to the dictates of the conscience. And it is the mutual duty of all to practice Christian forbearance, love, and charity towards each other." And that's really what he believed. We were a Christian nation at founding, and he was going to go all the way through his career with that. 23, Patrick Henry, Richard Henry Lee, and George Mason were united in opposition to the U.S. Constitution as written. The delegates elected to decide the fate of the Constitution at the Virginia Convention in 1788 were closely divided over its merits. Henry, Lee, and George Mason led the anti-federalists in debate, marshaling a wide array of arguments against the plan, all rooted in the conviction that the existing document created a government too powerful, too centralized, and too distant from its citizens. That was the key point, is they really believe that government is best done locally. The plan drawn at Philadelphia, Henry contended, created a consolidated government that would destroy the states in a revolution as radical as that which separated us from Great Britain. America's rights and privileges are endangered, and the sovereignty of the states will be relinquished, he warned. The rights of conscience, trial by jury, liberty of the press, all your immunities and franchises, all pretensions to human rights and privileges are rendered insecure if not lost. And you can see a real famous George Mason quote, which Henry agreed with. "Considering the natural lust for power so inherent in man, I fear the thirst for power will prevail to oppress the people." So this really was a large faction of folks on the anti-federalist side that were very unhappy with the U.S. Constitution without a Bill of Rights. 24, Patrick Henry was the voice of the Revolution, as Thomas Jefferson and James Madison were the pen. So I mentioned this earlier. It really was true. Patrick Henry was the voice, and those two gentlemen were the pen, or the written word. Radical is a title that few men can wear with ease. The name Patrick Henry during the Revolution and for some time after was synonymous with that word in the minds of colonists and the empire alike. Henry's reputation as a passionate and fiery orator exceeded even that of Samuel Adams. His Stamp Act resolutions were arguably the first shot fired in the Revolutionary War. His "Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death" speech was the match that lit the fuse. His voice was quite literally the voice of the American Revolution. Patrick Henry's personality was a curious antidote to the stern honor of Washington, the refined logic of Jefferson, the critical forward thinking of Madison, and the well-tempered industry of Franklin. He was truly the passion and the anger of the colonists all tied up in one body. And you can see their pictures of Jefferson and Madison and Henry and George Washington. All these men really did have different attributes and different qualities they brought to the table. Number 25, Patrick Henry had some epic quotes. Let's take a look at some of them now. First one is, "Give me liberty or give me death," his most important and most famous quote, one that was essentially the slogan of the Revolution. That was our national slogan. Number two, "The Bible is worth all the other books which have ever been printed." That's how he really felt. He felt like the Bible was the most important book and will always be the most important book. Number three, "United we stand, divided we fall. Let us not split into factions, which must destroy that union upon which our existence hangs." This was a quote that was much later in his life. Definitely not one he would have said when he was a young man. He was preaching very strongly about states' rights. This is one where he felt much stronger about the federal union staying together. "Perfect freedom is as necessary to the health and vigor of commerce as it is to the health and vigor of citizenship." What a great quote from Patrick Henry. It just really kind of sums up everything he believed about, and that is that freedom is really the only attribute that matters in our lives. "The Constitution is not an instrument for the government to restrain the people. It is an instrument for the people to restrain the government." Maybe one of my favorite quotes of all time is this one by Patrick Henry, and that is really, if you're truly a constitutionalist and you believe in the Constitution and you understand what it's all about, it, like it says here, the Constitution is not to form the government, it's to restrain the government. "It is when people forget God that tyrants forge their chains." So again, he believed that we were a Christian nation, formed a Christian nation, that all those philosophies that come out of that religion and come out of just spirituality in general and the good word that was in the book should be through all of our founding documents and all of our founding principles. Well, hopefully you enjoyed that rundown of 25 facts about Patrick Henry. Some really interesting stuff there that you might not have known, and hopefully it really gets you interested in him and interested in digging a little bit more on his background and some of his accomplishments. You can see he really was, like we said before, the voice of the Revolution. And he was passionate about the fact that it had gone too far, that war was unavoidable, that we had to fight for our independence. We had to give it everything we had. And these guys laid their lives on the line, and it was led by Patrick Henry in a lot of ways. So hopefully you enjoyed that, and was really excited and happy to bring this to you today. It was really fun putting together this research on Patrick Henry, really in some ways an unknown founder, but hopefully you'll know more about him now. So thank you very much. Please like this video and subscribe to the channel. We have a lot of great videos coming your way. And please drop me a comment down below. Tell me what you thought of the episode, and also any future episodes you'd like us to do. We'd love to hear it, and we're always looking for good topics. So thank you very, very much, and hope you have a great evening.